de hermanos publicistas desde el Tal Talk en continuación la que tú has venido en Río First Days Talk for the Values of Life and we came to the conclusion the soul is the most important phase about which we have not cared so far. We have been made to the body and its entrance or in the intellectual attainment. The Master said, is not body more than the raiment? And life more than the meat. What does it profit a man if he gains the possessions of the whole world and loses one's own soul? For that reason, we came to the conclusion that we must do something to know about God. Unless we know about God, we must know about our own self. So self-knowledge precedes God-knowledge. We are embodied souls, environed by mind and matter, identified with the body and outside so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. How to know ourselves? That is a matter of pure self-analysis. Then you lay down that God made man with equal privileges and the highest aim that is before us is to know God. For that purpose we have joined various schools of thought. Blessed is the school in which we have joined for this purpose. If we have achieved this object, our purpose of life is served. To know something, how can we give food to our soul? We came to the conclusion that it was the word, bread of life, which is word personified. Then yesterday we were talking about God, whether it is possible to see God, to find God, while in earthly life. That by reference to the various scriptures, we came to the conclusion that we can have an manifestation. We can manifest God within us, and we can open our inner eye to see Him. And also we can open our inner ears to hear Him. So this was what was given to you yesterday. So there was also given some qualifications required for a man who wishes to know God. And that was told you that the chastity of life, perseverance, and also control of the organs of sense, and last of all, love of God and love of all humanity. Now we have to see how can we see God. You see God in wordless. When it came into being, wordless and nameless, when it came into being, it is called word, unknown. That word has been called a whole creation. That is why the Masters have referred to word as the cause of all creation. That word is also called by the name name, or word, or shabda. So one is the expression of God in nature, of the same God, which is the basic ground, I should say, the absolute, absolute God, which nobody can see in life, that is only of going to Him, we are now totally. But when it comes into expression, we can have a glimpse of God, but with what eyes? That old lady who you yesterday, those are not the eyes of flesh and bone, but the inner eye, called by different saints, by different names. Single eye or third eye, or the latent eye. So that is within each man, that is not the eye of the flesh and bones, but that the inner eye within each man, which is closed. If when that eye is open, we do see the light of God and hear the voice of God. How to open the inner eye? This is a question. To sit at the feet of somebody who knows the way. You know, Son of Man can do it. But it is the God power manifested in some manhole which alone is competent to give you the inner eye, open the inner eye to see the light of God. Because God has no equal, no brother, no sister, no father. Now who can connect you to God? Common sense may you find. It is He alone who can raise our souls from the bondage of mind and matter and unite the soul with Himself. God resides in every heart. There is no heart where God is not. That's the controlling power of our souls in the body. It is that power where it is manifest that manifested God in man can do that. What? Each one of us has God in our hearts, but the difference lies in the fact that God is manifest somewhere it is still latent. So that God into action power can be seen and can also be heard. So name and the named are in fact one and the same. Wordless God and God in action, which is called Word, they are in fact one and the same. There is hardly any distinction between the two. One is the aesthetic form of that which is complete. Light cannot be separated from the sun. Rays of the sun, the light of the sun is not separate from the sun. So the two go together all the world over. World, God in expression power, and the wordless state from which came into expression is the same. Similarly, Godhood and God cannot be demarcated and set aside in watertight compartments as two separate entities. The power is just an attribute of the other. So noun or name or shabda is nothing else, nothing more or less than Godhood of God. So in Bible it is called the Holy Ghost or the Comforter. It is the primeval manifestation of God, responsible for the entire creation. It is the primeval, St. John speaks of it, in the beginning was the Word was with God, and Word was God. All things were made by Him, you see. then we close further to say that without him was nothing, anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of man. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. This is what St. John said. But you will find further, thy world is settled in hell. All sounds are made by the world. So this is what about the world it is said. So all that is, you see, name and the named are but one, light of Naam witnesseth his glory. This is what the Mohammedan saint tells us. You find the same thing given out by the masters whenever they came, whether they came in the east or the west, that makes no difference. What does it say? All that is out and from Naam. For it pervades everywhere. It is the life principle of the entire creation. He in whom this world or Naam becomes personified or manifested is called a saint. For it is said that the world was made flesh and dwelt amongst us. This is exactly what Guru Nanak said. God, when he manifested in some mantle, it is he alone who can give us a contact with the God in action power. For you find world was made flesh and dwelt amongst us. Such a one has reached the summum bonum of life. So, such a person is competent that whose manifold that God has manifested, that God manifested and on any human pole is only competent to raise our souls above the control of the mind and matter and connect it with him, with himself. That is for that reason, you see, this is the time, you see, man body, the golden opportunity which we can have that privilege. As I told the name for yesterday, the man who has got the man body has but sight to see God. So those, fortunate is the man who has contacted with a person that through whom God is manifest. Because in his company only he gets a connection, a unity with God. The man who has not been able during his lifetime to establish a contact with world or Naam, he at the time of death quits his body like a defeated gambler. So, greatness of Naam and world and its need has been spoken of by all masters who came in the past, and we find description of all that in the scriptures which are with us today. So the access of spiritual regions cannot be gained except with the means of Naam. The touch with the divine current purifies a person of all iniquities. All doubts and distractions become airy nothings, and the mind becomes steady and calm, with the result of God's light is reflected therein. So Naam may appear, but in what it says, mano, syllable, but it is great power behind it. But the dose of Naam of world when taken reduces the entire garbage to a heap of ashes, like there may be tons and tons of firewood. If little spark of fire put, then the whole thing turns out to mere a dust of comes into death, similarly, if you come across some God man, you might say now, God in man or man in God, when you come across with him, he is able to give a contact with the Nam power and the world power within. By coming in contact with it, all the mental impurities are burnt away. Just like a spark of fire in a powder of magazine, you might say. So that Nam contact with the Nam power is what is required. Of course, you see, if you get then have contact with that body making power, our life is, truly speaking, becomes pure, you see. By communing with the Nam, one transcends the limitation of the flesh and reaches far beyond the realm of the fears of opposites. So a contact with Nam assures salvation to all. Whether good or bad, learned or unlearned, like sun and fire gives warmth and light to all. Similarly, you find it is just like you take a pill, which is very laxative, you see. You eat it purposely or even eat by error, you have motion, you see. Similarly, if your soul comes in contact with the Nam power within, and naturally the result is that our own sins are washed away, you see. So masters have defined this thing, that it is that power which is the power of all creation, and it resides in every heart. Now, there's no place where that God in action power is not. But still, to have a contact with that, you cannot have it without the Master. Because it is the God in him who can give you contact with God still. So that is the controlling power which is controlling us in the body and controlling all creation. But where to find it? Guru Arjan says, for him, to find him, you will have to go within the laboratory of the main body. First, you have to withdraw your attention from all outside, tap inside and mess, Emerson says, and then rise above senses. You will find him then and there. So yogi says, once Guru Amardas came in contact with a yogi, he asked him where we can find the contact with the world of now. He told him, when you rise above the six dimensions in the body, you find him, you see. So what is it? I mean, how to recognize that God is there? So all masters say God is light. God is some principle. When wordless God came into being, it is called word. There is vibration. And vibration results from two things, light and sound. So there are two ways within, two aspects, you might say, of the God-making power, which is controlling all creation and us in the body too. If you have contact with that, that will lead you to the place from where it emanated. So how to come in contact with that, for that we will have to just first withdraw from outside within, and from within rise above senses. Then you come in contact with that light and sound principle. So for that reason the masters have been giving that God or world is a lamp unto my feet and light unto my body. So these are the expressions what we have from time to time when the masters come, you see. So now to that God in action power, There are innumerable names given to that. The sages and the saints have described God in action power by innumerable terms. Some call it as the law of all. Some call it as the peerless one. Some say he is the nameless one. Others say, well, look, you are, he is incomprehensible and ineffable. So many names have been given to the God in action power, but all these are just attributive or quantitative names. Names signifying noun, names simply describe any one aspect or facet of God and appeal far most to individuals like him. So thousands of such names appear in the Holy Scriptures. Now some say it is pervading all. Others say it is encompassing all. Some say it is Allah, God, you see. Jews call it as Jehovah. So for that reason, these various names are used. So we have to start from where? From the names given to the God in action power, you see, to bring you in contact with the absolute God, the way back to God. So all of the repetition of names has its own value and utility. It is needed for some purpose, but it cannot lead to self-realization and God-realization. This is the way back, of course. It has its own function, but unless and no further. So we have the sweet remembrance of God, and for having that sweet remembrance of God, we must have some words to denote Him. But unless we come to the words, to the actual thing which these very words denote, we cannot derive the full benefit of that. Both of which can be achieved only through contact with God in action power. Call it by whatever you may, but it is generally called by various saints or masters. Some call it word, the others call it Shabda, the third call it Ram Nama, Mohammedan saints call it Kalma. And these various names, in the Vedas it is called Shruti. And Lord Ashton term is a Shrosha. Mahamud is called it as a Kalamikari. So these are the various words given to the God in action power context, and this context can come about only through the grace of some competent master. Who is a competent master? He is a man like us, apparently, but the God which is latent in his house, it is manifest there. And he is conscious of that power is working through him. It is only the God power in him can unite us with God. So everyone repeating the monosyllable of any name gets no touch with the power around behind the monosyllable. You say, for instance, the water. Water is a liquid something. It is called in various languages by various names. That water is called aqua in Latin. In French it is called power eau. In Hindi it is called jal and nir. In Persian it is called aap. So these are the words denoting that liquid by drinking which your thirst is satisfied. So first is just directing us to some things by drinking which our thirst can be satisfied. The two are the different things, you see. It is the grace of the Master alone that can give us a living touch with the all-embracing life. Impulse and the wish yielding of Alexander. That is in his power, the God in him has the power to raise our soul which is now embedded under the weight of mind, outgoing faculties and other endowments, to raise you up, give a lift, bring it up and give you contact with that coordination power which is called as the living water of life. You remember, Christ met a mortal lady, Samaritan lady. She was carrying a pitcher full of water and asked her of water. She was a Samaritan lady, she was wondering, asked, when you are a Jew, you have no connection with Samaritans, why are you asking for water from me? And Christ said, had she known who was asking for water, she would have given it. And he told her, son, when you get this water that you are carrying, this once you drink, your thirst is only satisfied once. Again you thirst again. But if you come to me, I would have given you a living water of life, by drinking which you would not thirst again. So it is the bread of life and the water of life. So bread of life is also the very word, you see. So the repetition of word water never quenches the thirst, mind that. One may slake the thirst by taking a draught of water. Similarly, by taking words, mere repetition of this or that name, without an actual touch with the named, give us more, I mean, full benefit that will direct us towards that thing, of course, but cannot take us to that world. If one were to become rich by calling for riches, then there would hardly be one without being rich. To talk of riches is something else. To talk of to be rich is something else. To talk about the health, I mean, loss of health is something else, and to talk to be healthy is something else. So similarly, you will find it is the water of life, or what you call the bread of life, which the Master has been referred to it. Christ said, I am the bread of life. Whoever eats it, that bread of life has come from heaven. Whoever eats of it has got everlasting life. So what was that bread of life or the water of life? You will find the world was made flesh and dwelt amongst us. You see? So it was world personified. When we come in contact with that, the God, our soul of food, that is bread of life, by which our soul becomes strong. So this question arises, you see, Guru Ramadas, Guru, first Guru of this, Guru Nanak says, what is that name by repeating which you can know God, you can cross over the ocean of life. So you should now ask any religion, you see, all those calling those particular religions, they will say our own world is the only world that can take you across the ocean of life. Hindu, their God, they say Ram is the only word. Sikhs say it is Vaidukan is the only word. And Mahometans say it is the Allahu only word. Well, who is that? Well, it is. These are the names, qualitative names, and that Kalma as a true name and the word which is God in action power, until we come in contact with that basic are the ultimate thing which have been given by, expressed by so many names, we cannot cross over the ocean of life.
Good morning and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The reading you listened to was the first 30 minutes of a lecture given at the Second Church on October 9th, 1963, in Boston, Massachusetts. Our reader this morning is Rick Casey. Hello, Rick.
Hello, Christine. This morning I will continue reading from the book God-Man, resuming with chapter 26, The Blessings of God and the Master. To understand the teachings of the Master and strictly follow them from day to day, to confide in him, and to completely surrender oneself, body, and soul to his will is not an easy thing to do. Unless God and Satguru both take pity on a jiva, he cannot possibly see through to reality and escape from bondage. Himself, the master of the universe, he may draw in a jiva and effect a union. We, with our limited understanding, cannot even listen comprehendingly to the master's words. But in the fullness of time, when it so pleases God, he brings about a meeting between a jiva and a sant Satguru, who establishes his contact with Nam, the power of God or God in action, the primal sound current, wherewith a jiva is gradually led on and on until he reaches the source and the fountainhead of Shabd, or the sound current. Those who serve not truth wither away like a broken reed, O Nanak. Whom the Master blesses gets linked with Nam. With a special merit alone one meets a Satguru, and he brings about a union between Sarat and Shabd. Meeting with a Master is a pure gift of God, and so is the union with Hari Nam. The Master is in the likeness of God, though in physical raiments. He, too, is endowed with the same attributes as God himself. He, too, comes to save the sinners and administer his saving grace among the rest. He washes the jivas clean of their sins and gives the gift of Nam, which acts as a sovereign remedy against all ills, physical, accidental, and spiritual. My Master takes away all sins, and I depend on him. Forgive all my trespasses, O Master. Nanak prays for this alone. Great are the blessings of a perfect Master. With the worship of Hari comes eternal bliss. The union with the Lord is the gift of a perfect Master. Eternally forgiven, I now soar, limitless and free. The 17th century English poet, Dryden, speaking of Christ, tells us, "See God descending in thy human frame, the offended suffering in the offender's name. All thy misdeeds to him imputed see, and all his righteousness devolved on thee." The grace of the Master is as limitless as his greatness, so much so that he forgives even those who talk ill of him and accepts them as his very own. One who talks ill of the Master may yet turn around to find his saving grace leading him to his fold. Countless are the persons whose sins are forgiven and are safely ferried across the sea of life. With Shabd, he burns to ashes the karmic impressions of many a soul. Like a captain, he pilots the ship through many a shoal. The Master truly is God. He is a sea of heaving compassion. All kinds of gifts eternally flow from him like perennial springs of cool and refreshing water. Narain in Guru is compassion incarnate and a true friend. In his pleasure is everything, and Nanak is a sacrifice unto him. The greatest gift of God and Guru is just one thing, Nam. They always bestow upon their devotees the blessings of Nam, and thus bring about their salvation. Devotees of God ever revel in Nam. With saving grace, they ever march on. The very sight of him is a rare blessing. The truly blessed can have it. With the mercy of the merciful, Satguru confers the gift of Nam. In this world and hereafter, there is no gift greater than that of Nam. Priceless is the treasure of Nam. A true one may grant it at his will. One can secure the gift of Nam and thereby find an approach to God through satsang and Satguru. Whomever the Master may bless, he may have the love of the Lord. The compassion of God comes into commotion when one is truly blessed by a sod, O Nanak. The saving grace comes through contact with Nam and continuous cherishing of his love, and saving grace in turn helps the other way. Both grace and Nam work in reciprocity and help in developing each other. O Nanak, Nam comes from grace alone. There is no friend other than Ram Nam. Getting above the pairs of opposites, stick to Nam, and he shall bless. The moment I forget him, that moment is wasted. Remember him with every breath, and his grace shall be with us. His grace descends by acceptance of his bana, or will, and recognition of his hukam, or commandment. He who knows his hukam has no occasion to regret. O Nanak, engrave the gift of his Nam on thy soul. The seed of Nam, once sown by a saint, cannot but fructify. No power can stop it, and the jiva must sooner or later reach the goal, viz., self-realization and God-realization. Truth one gets through grace alone. None has the power to stop its growth. Nam is watered by death in life, and Gurumukhs do it. God grants them this treasure, and none can snatch it. Even call, time, and maya, delusion, can have no effect on the seed of Nam, for it is conceived in a region much higher than their domains. Besides, the sower of the seed, the Satguru, is Satpurush himself, his manifested form, and so Ishwar, Niranjan, Lord of the subtle region, and Parmeshwar, Om, Lord of the causal region, cannot interfere in his work. The gift of a guru is eternal. It has the saving grace for the recipient. The shabd of the master reigns supreme, O Nanak. The master is no one but God. The blessings of the Supreme Lord are limitless, but do not at any time suffer from scarcity. but one partakes of them only by extraordinary merit. A particle of grace is enough to save a jiva from the ceaseless cycle of transmigration. Once he showers his blessings, there is an end to endless births. As comings and goings cease, one at home finds eternal rest. It is only the Gurumukhs who get this grace, and not the Manmukhs. O Nanak, he does all by himself, and Gurumukhs enjoy his favor. The bitter words of the Master taste sweet. His sweet words are a boon all his own. His words, whatever they are, bear fruit in abundance, but the idle words of others go in vain. One works out Nam through his grace alone. Thy grace alone helps in developing the power of Nam. Without any shortcomings, one ever engages in Nam. Man by himself is just a helpless creature and can do nothing. He must not, therefore, feel vainglorious for what he seemingly does. God alone is the doer of all acts. He knows the innermost secrets of all hearts. The panacea for all ills and the only way to win God's grace is a perfect surrender in all humility at the feet of the Master Soul. Chapter 27. The Solicitude of the Master. The relationship of the Master and the disciple is unique in character, and we find no parallel to it on earth. Still, saints have tried to make us understand something of it. While all worldly connections and ties are more or less tainted by selfishness, the relationship between the Master and the disciple is purely one of selfless love. Just for the sake of analogy, we may consider the love of a mother for her child. An infant at birth is just a mere helpless mass of tender flesh and bones. He cannot express himself and his needs, nor can he look after himself. But the mother takes tender care of the tiny piece of humanity. She attends to his every need and looks after his comforts. In his happiness lies her happiness, and in his sorrow she feels distressed. Day and night she tirelessly works for the child's welfare and does not consider any sacrifice too great. She denies herself everything so that her child may have all that she can afford to give and is ready even to lay down her life for his sake. As the infant grows, he begins to imbibe his mother's love. The kindly rays of love pass from eyes to eyes. In mute language, he begins his first lessons in love. Gradually, the toddler is taught to speak, at first in broken syllables, and the mother's delight knows no bounds at every success in her endeavors, until he grows big enough to look after himself. In exactly the same way, when a person is accepted by the Master, he takes a second birth, as it were, into the Master's house. He comes into the Master's fold, full of worldly attachments, and dive deep in the darkest shades of mind and matter. He is so identified with his body and bodily relations that he can never think that he is something apart from them. With all his worldly wisdom, whatever riches, name, and fame he may have, he is blank in matters spiritual. Having lived all his life on a sensual plane, he is conscious of nothing but sense pleasures, which are the end and all for him. With his birth in the Master's house, the Master takes upon himself an immense load of responsibility. By individual instructions and attention, he gradually weans the jiva from sense pleasures. He tells the disciple that he is neither body nor mind nor intellect, but something more glorious, soul or spirit, and has been endowed by nature with various faculties to serve a high purpose in life. By spiritual discipline, the Master enables him to free his mind of mental oscillations. Now he develops a state of equipoise, and with it begins to evaluate life from a different angle. His entire outlook is changed, and a consciousness of spirit dawns in him. He is no longer a slave of his senses engaged in sensual pursuits, but finds an inner satisfaction, peace, and serenity, which keeps him engrossed all the time at the seat of the very self. All this is the work of the Master, and much more besides. To wash clean a jiva from the impurities of the world is no mean task, but it is absolutely necessary for a spiritual life. He has to be pulled up from his senses, mind, and intellect, and this no one but a master can achieve. To stop the course of the mighty rush of sensory currents flowing headlong into the world, and to hold them at one center, is a gigantic task in itself. The next job of the master is even more important than this. After the preliminary cleansing process, he pulls the scales from the inner eye and gives it vision and light. And he breaks the seal on the inner ear, making the jiva hear the inner music of the soul. By his individual attention and care, he makes an adept out of trash and scrap, capable of understanding and enjoying the unspoken language and unwritten law of God, and of doing actions without the aid of outer organs and faculties. The Master takes care of the disciple with his own life impulse. Blessed indeed is the Master who, by his instructions, purifies us through and through. Satguru cuts asunder all the shackles of the disciples. As Wordsworth sang of his sister, so a disciple sings of his master. She gave me eyes, she gave me ears, and humble cares and delicate fears. A heart the fountain of sweet tears, and love and thought and joy. The Master always saves his disciples, no matter how dangerous a situation they may be in. His protecting arms serve as a shield and buckler. And the disciple leads a charmed life, as it were. The Master does all this simply because he has taken charge of the jiva. There is no obligation on the disciple's part, nor does he necessarily know about it. Again, the Master takes upon himself the burden of his disciples' sins and iniquities. All thy misdeeds to him imputed be, and all his righteousness devolved on thee. Dryden. He He takes in his own hands the entire process of winding up the karmic impressions of the jiva, having freed him from the sensual plane by reversing his sensory current so that it flows upward. The master renders him incapable of sowing any more karmic seeds for future harvesting, and whatever trespasses he may still commit through weakness of the flesh, the master himself gently and firmly deals with here on earth, leaving no debit balance to be carried forward. In this way, the account of kriyaman karma, present deeds, is settled and squared. Next comes the palabdha karmas, which determine what we call fate or destiny, and because of which we come into the world. The master does not touch them, and happily the disciple weaves his way through their spell. Through the compassion of the Lord, all trials and tribulations fly. Satguru himself saves a jiva from all harm. Last but not least, the master feeds the jiva with the bread of life and quenches his thirst with the water of life, nam, until he grows into spiritual adolescence and is capable of a certain amount of self-reliance. The touch of the spark of nam, the God in action or controlling power of God, burns out the storehouse of unfructified karma of ages upon ages, thus rendering them incapable of germinating in the future. Satguru keeps his Sikh disciple on mana and elixir. So very kind is the master to his disciple. I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. John 6:35. The protective care of the master is much more than that of a mother for her child. He ever keeps his loving eyes on his disciple and guards him from all that is harmful, for his love knows no bounds. As a mother tends her child and ever looks after him, gives him food and nourishment for growth all around, so does the master look after his beloved with godly love. As mother loves the child and fish the water, so does master love his own man. In this respect, distance is of no consequence, and it does not count with the master. His long and strong arm can reach everywhere, and his penetrating gaze can pierce through all space. His hand is the hand of God, and the power of God works through him. Maulana Rumi. Whatever a disciple may be, however extreme his outer circumstances, the master is always with him and guides him at every step, for that is his eternal promise. Every man, I will go with thee and be thy guide, and thy most need to go by thy side. A skylark is a pilgrim of the skies, and yet she hatches her eggs by giving them her whole attention. Similarly, the master always keeps his disciple within his gaze, nurtures him with the water of life, the seed of nam sown in the seeker's soul, until the spirit is able to break through the triple-shelled egg, physical, astral, and causal sheaths, and shine forth in her own self-radiance. O Nanak, Master takes care of the disciple with his very life impulse. He keeps him safe in his own hands and looks after him all the time. Love alone is the cementing force that binds the master and the disciple. Through unbounded compassion, he delivers God's message to suffering humanity and prays that they may be saved from the imperceptible fire in which all are being consumed. Maulana Rumi says, "He calls the people toward the kingdom of God. He prays to God for their forgiveness and salvation." Sadhguru is the real friend of the disciple. He saves him from tense and hopeless situations. He comes to his aid when he has despaired of all hope and relief and is surrounded by seemingly powerful forces arrayed against him. From time to time, the disciple feels the overpowering influence of the master, working for his good. At times, he works in ways that are difficult for the disciple to understand, just as a mother waits in the early morning hours for her sleeping child to awaken. In the same way, even more anxiously, the master looks forward wistfully to the time when his disciple, steeped in deep ignorance born of matter and mind, will raise his head, look toward him, and gladden his heart. The loving care of the master becomes more manifest at the time of the disciple's final leave-taking from the world. While all his relatives and friends helplessly wait beside the sickbed, and the doctors declare the case hopeless, the luminous form of the master appears to take charge of the departing spirit and guide it to the new world, to the judgment seat of God. After that, he takes it to whatever region he thinks best for further discipline and advancement on the path. Serve the real Sadhguru and secure tightly the riches of truth. At the last moment, he shall come to thy rescue. He alone is a friend who accompanies me on my last journey and stands by me before the judgment seat of God. My master is all in all and the source of all comforts. He links me with the transcendent Brahma and comes to my aid at the last. Maulana Rumi says, "O ignorant fool, quickly take hold of a guide, for then wilt thou be saved from the horrors of the beyond." All our worldly ties and connections are of an ephemeral character. Some leave us in poverty, some in adversity, some in illness. A few may stay beside us all through life, but they too fall away at the time of death. But Sadhguru is the real friend who always overshadows the disciple and keeps his protecting arms around him wherever he may be. He stands by him at the time of his death and even goes along with his spirit as a guide to the other worlds. O Nanak, snap asunder all ties of the world and find some friendly saint. World attachments shall leave thee even in life, while the other shall stand steadfast unto death and beyond. A soul awakened to reality by a Sadhguru cannot be a prey to the messengers of death, but must go with the radiant form of the Master, which comes to receive it when it casts off its physical raiment. Well, I have come to the end of my time. I was reading from God-Man, chapters 26 and 27. Thank you, Master, for everything.
And thank you, Rick, for reading Master's gracious, beautiful words to us. There were 78 participants at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Divine Master, for bringing us together to receive your loving guidance.
So just think carefully, you see. I have nothing to impose on you. Just appeal to your common sense for your own good and for my pleasure. Why? My Master gave me the God in him this duty. Whether I fail or not fail, it is not my job. I have to do my best. The God in me and you will be helped without asking for it.